Hello, everyone. Welcome to our listeners in the Big Apple from across the U.S. and around the world. I'm Jeff Goodman, and you've tuned into Rediscovering New York. I'm a real estate broker with Halsted Real Estate, but Rediscovering New York is not a program about real estate. It's about New York City's neighborhoods and their extraordinary history. On most programs, we focus on a particular neighborhood, exploring its history and also its current energy, texture, and vibe. What makes that New York neighborhood special? And we do it through interviews with urban historians, preservationists, local business owners, nonprofits, artists, and interesting neighborhood personalities. Sometimes we host a show about an interesting part or theme of the city that's not focused on one particular neighborhood. If you've been listening avidly, you'll know that recent past shows have included a history of U.S. presidents who came or who lived in New York, the history of the women's suffrage movement in Brooklyn, which until 1898 was its own city, the history of Irish immigrants who came to New York, and an episode on the history of bicycles and cycling. In the future, we may journey to some of the city's parks or the subway, or the age of a particular social or political movement or musical genre. I know I keep threatening to do a show about punk, and I will one day, or a unique New York architectural phenomenon like Rockefeller Center. And, of course, each show is available on archive and podcast the day after the show airs. You can listen to us on iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud, and Stitcher. Today we're journeying to a neighborhood that many New Yorkers think is kind of nondescript, but it really has its own unique history and its own special vibe. And I'm referring to Yorkville, which is on the east side of Manhattan. Yorkville, in case people are wondering, it goes from 79th to 96th Street and east of 3rd Avenue. Our first guest is a regular on Rediscovering New York, Lucy Levine. Lucy is a writer, historian, and New York City tour guide. She founded Archive on Parade, a historical tour and event company that takes New York's history out of the archives and into the streets. Lucy has collaborated with institutions including the Municipal Arts Society, the Historic Districts Council, of which yours truly is a member, the New York Public Library, the 92nd Street Y, the St. Regis Hotel, and Landmarks West. Lucy offers exciting tours, lectures, and community events all over town. She is also the public programs consultant at Friends of the Upper East Side Historic Districts and contributing history writer at Six Square Feet. Lucy Levine, welcome back to Rediscovering New York.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad to be here.
Tell us a little about your background. You're from New York originally, aren't you?
Yes, I am. I am originally from the Upper West Side, where we are now, although I have lived in Yorkville, and I am the public programs consultant for Friends of the Upper East Side Historic District, so I do have a real connection to that neighborhood, and currently I live in Greenpoint, Brooklyn.
What kinds of work have you done in your career?
I have done a real grab bag of things. Principally, I'm a historian and researcher and tour guide, so the bulk of my work is guiding New Yorkers and visitors around the city and helping them see the city in a new way. I know that there's a story around every corner, and I love sharing that.
Was there anything in particular that inspired you to go into the work that you do?
I've always loved history because I'm a New Yorker. You know, the history of the city is in my blood and in my heart. And also, I really wanted to do something that would help me connect with people and share just human experience and human stories, because that's what history is. It's the study of human experience through time. And so being able to just be part of that in my own life is something I really wanted.
Well, that's great. I agree wholeheartedly. It's not just about facts and figures, but about the people who walk the streets and experience the things that we'd like to talk about. Many people think of Yorkville as being kind of nondescript. In my business, in the real estate business, Yorkville has what we call those white brick buildings. But the history of Yorkville is actually very rich. History of different European people who came not that close ago. They were here for a long time. And their descendants actually go back centuries. When did the first Europeans settle in what we now know as Yorkville?
So Yorkville became sort of a village, a playground for the very rich way back in the 18th century. There were these very large and lavish homes. The only one that's still standing is, of course, Gracie Mansion, which is now the people's house, the home of our mayors, going back to Fiorella LaGuardia, excluding, of course, Mayor Bloomberg. He didn't live there, but everybody else did since LaGuardia. So that building was built by Archibald Gracie in 1799.
So it's actually older than City Hall is then?
Yes.
Ah. You know, one interesting thing about Gracie Mansion, and I just discovered this not that long ago, is Alexander Hamilton was shot in a duel on the hills of Weehawken, and he was rowed back to what's now in the West Village. He died in front of a fireplace. That house is no longer there, but the mantle of that fireplace was actually moved to Gracie Mansion.
It absolutely was, and that fireplace has a lot of history. It's not only the fire; it's not only the mantelpiece in front of which, as you say, Alexander Hamilton died, but it is the fireplace that hosted the very first Yule log. So, in 1966, WPIX Channel 11 aired the first Yule log footage, which is exactly what it sounds like. It was just hours and hours on loop of a fireplace, you know, with a burning log for Christmas. And that log, where was it? At Gracie Mansion. So that fireplace has sort of an eclectic history, if you like.
And it was in that was the same. The Yule log fireplace was the Hamilton fireplace. Wow.
Yes.
Were there local Lenape people living in the area when European people first arrived?
Of course. You know, the entirety of Manhattan Island and its surrounding area was all Lenape territory, yeah. Hmm.
What was Jones Wood, or Jones's Wood? Am I pronouncing that correct? Is it Jones's Wood or Jones Wood?
Jones's. It really is kind of keeping up with the Joneses, because it was this pleasure ground for the rich. So as I said, there were many mansions there, of which Gracie Mansion was one. And because this was sort of a country estate for the very wealthy, it was at that time about 5 miles from the city as it was understood to be sort of this commercial center. And so this was really kind of out in the country. And so Jones's Wood was what we would now think of almost as a country club, if you want, in the sense that it was this clearing where, you know, they had horse races, they had bonfires, they had dances, they had, you know, kind of cultural activities, like, if you want, which I think is really fun, a cultural center in this very rarefied community.
When did Yorkville begin to become something else aside from a country place? When did it first started to have semblances of a village or of what we would know as an urban setting? Or,
sure.
Or of what they knew as an urban setting in the early 19th century?
Sure. So the first time that we hear the word Yorkville is 1826. And then going forward, the growth of mass transit is really going to make Yorkville what it is. And so it's so interesting. We just recently had the opening of the Second Avenue subway, and everybody's talking about how that really puts Yorkville on the map transportationally. But that's actually something that's been going on for centuries. So by the 1830s, you have the very first railroad connection to Yorkville, and that was the New York and Harlem Railroad. Those were the first lines being laid in the area, and that really spurs development. And then in the 1840s and 50s, you get freight lines, and then in the 1870s, you get the elevated on 2nd and 3rd Avenue. And so as transportation really proliferates in the area, you're going to get sort of larger and larger and more diverse groups of people coming to Yorkville.
Well, of course, the 2nd and 3rd Avenue L's would have had local stops. Did the New York and Harlem have the railroad have stops in Yorkville, or were they just sort of through trains that went up 4th Avenue and went up north?
They were more through trains, more commuter rail from elsewhere, but there would have been stops, yes, in the 90s, and then going down further into what we would call, you know, Midtown, and then sort of the base of the financial district in Manhattan, so that there was a community growing around that railroad very early on. Yeah.
So Yorkville gets developed, and like many neighborhoods in the city, begins to, with access to transportation, you begin to get more people moving north for better spaces and bigger spaces, including immigrants. To a lot of people, Yorkville is known for its German immigrants and the German-American community who lived there. But there actually were more immigrants from a few other European countries who settled there even before Germans and German-Americans moved there in large numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about the Czech immigrants who moved to Uptown, to Yorkville.
Sure. So there was a very, very large Czech Catholic community. My favorite Czech Catholic, whom we never ever think of as a Czech Catholic, actually was Andy Warhol. That's why he lived there. Andy Warhol was a practicing Catholic for his entire life, and he lived in Yorkville and on the Upper East Side for decades. And one of the reasons that was the case, he lived there in the 80s, the blocks, the 80s, 86th Street. 89th Street, with his mother for years and years and years because they were practicing Czech Catholics. But of course, the Czech Catholic community goes back way further than that. Actually, the oldest Czech Catholic congregation is in Yorkville. Jan Hus is the oldest Czech Catholic church in the nation. But yeah, the Czechs have a very interesting history in Yorkville because something called cigar tenements really became associated with...
Cigar tenements?
Yes.
Are that tenements where people sat around smoking cigars?
No, not smoking cigars, making them.
Oh.
So when we think about sweatshops, right, we think of sort of factory spaces, but a lot of the immigrants at the turn of the century in New York City were working out of their homes, and the Czech Catholics... or not necessarily Catholics, but the Czech community in Yorkville very often were working out of their homes, and so those became known as cigar tenements, where working Czech people would spend all day making cigars.
In their homes?
Yep.
So it wasn't like in Carmen in a big cigarette factory with... No. There were also large numbers of Hungarian immigrants. When did they start coming to Yorkville?
So the Hungarians will start coming as soon as those 2nd and 3rd Avenue L's are established, so will the communities sort of make their way to Yorkville. And what's so interesting about the Hungarian community is that as the Czechs created community around their churches, so did the Hungarians. And one of the most interesting Hungarian churches in the neighborhood was actually designed by Emery Roth. It's the only ecclesiastical building that Emery Roth ever designed. And Emery Roth himself was actually a Hungarian. And so it's quite sort of moving to see that he's able to take his own cultural heritage and really realize it in stone, which I think is really beautiful. And that was the case with so many immigrant communities in Yorkville. There's a really sort of rich heritage of ecclesiastical architecture, with the Hungarians, with the Irish, with the Germans, you know, even Jewish communities as well. Just really sort of stunning pieces of architecture.
When did Germans and German Americans begin moving to Yorkville in significant numbers?
So that will be in the 1860s and 70s. So the first sort of iteration of Germans in New York, they'll come in the 1840s and they'll settle in what was Kleine Deutschland, in what's now the East Village. But as they became more prosperous, you know, the second generation is going to move out of what was then considered to be sort of a tenement area, you know, and up into more of a middle class enclave. So they'll come the 1860s and 70s and then, you know, into the 1880s and 90s and so on and so forth. And of course, you know, the German sort of stamp on the neighborhood is the one that's best known.
Hmm. Well, we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about a very sad event that led to more Germans and German Americans moving to Yorkville, as well as the rest of the history of Yorkville. Be back in a moment.
Are you a business owner? Do you want to be a business owner? Do you work with business owners? Hi, I'm Stephen Fry, your small and medium-sized business, or SMB guy, and I'm the host of the new show, Always Friday. While I love to have fun on my show, we take those Friday feelings of freedom and clarity to discuss popular topics on the minds of SMBs today. Please join me and my various special guests on Friday at 11 a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
Are you interested in having a better relationship with yourself, others, and God? Greetings. I'm your host, Dr. George Andow, for the show A Journey Through Into Awareness. On my show, we journey into the awareness that the mind of God is the true seat of our personal consciousness. We join together each Monday at 7 p.m., so tune in on Talk Radio NYC.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Welcome back to Rediscovering New York and our first guest, Lucy Levine of Archive on Parade. We're talking about Yorkville. Before we continue with the history of Yorkville, Lucy, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about your business?
Sure. So I run a historical tour and event company called Archive on Parade, where I take New York's fascinating history out of the archives and into the streets through fantastic storytelling flair. So you'll get lots of deep research and lots of great stories. And that's what I love to do. And you can find a whole host of tours available on my website. That's archiveonparade.com.
Well, great. Well, now we're going to continue with a very sad event, which affected and impacted the cultural makeup of Yorkville. And that was the General Slocum disaster mm-hmm. in 1904. Do you want to talk about that for...
Sure. That was the largest disaster loss of life in New York City prior to 9/11. It was just, you know, a stunning, stunning loss of life. A number of German, particularly women and children, had gone on what was essentially a pleasure cruise on the East River. And there was a disaster on the boat, and so many people perished. Over 1,000 people perished. It was just absolutely horrific. And the situation was that people, and they had all come from what was Kleine Deutschland, which is now the East Village, and the situation was that their family members couldn't live in the neighborhood anymore. It was just too haunting for them. And so in droves, you know, they moved up to Yorkville to be, you know, in a different German community.
Well, and planted their seeds, and then there's a cultural blossoming of businesses and of life. Speaking of life, Yorkville was known as an area of brewing, wasn't it?
Absolutely. So the largest breweries in the nation were in Yorkville, and you had competing breweries across the street from one another, which I just think is fantastic.
I'm looking at a picture right now, and hold on, our listeners can't see it, but holding it up and people in the studio, George Eret's Hellgate Brewery. The thing is enormous. It's bigger than any brewery I've even seen, you know, outside of airports and in other cities in the United States right now. When was it opened?
So the brewery opened in the 1880s, and at the same time, it really had some intense competition from Jacob Rupert, who's best known for The Curse of the Bambino. He actually brought us the Bambino, so that's pretty... That's pretty fantastic. Yankees fans can thank him.
Bambino being Babe Ruth.
Indeed.
Right, yeah. How did the brewery shape the culture of Yorkville?
So many of the workers who worked in the brewery, and as you say, it was so large. It was the largest in the nation, and there were so many in Yorkville that were so large. And the workforce was really local. They were not sort of, you know, outsourcing that work in any kind of way. And so many of the people who were living in Yorkville were working in the breweries. And so it really created this whole community around those breweries. And then, of course, because there were so many people working locally, you know, there were cultural destinations and restaurants and so on and so forth that were catering to them. So 86th Street became what was known as German Broadway. And that, you know, has for generations been really the heart and soul of Yorkville. And so you had, you know, the Casino Theater on 86th Street, and it was the Yorkville Casino, rather, you know, being one of the largest theaters in the neighborhood. And just you had, you know, German singing societies. You just had this incredible array of businesses that were catering to the brewery workers. But, you know, those aren't the only workers in the neighborhood. My favorite sort of working story about Yorkville is that there used to be something called a piano ferry at the foot of 92nd Street.
Piano ferry? You could take a ferry and listen to pianos, or was it?
If only. No, you could take the ferry to make pianos. So there was a large contingent of the Yorkville community that worked in the Steinway Piano Factory in Astoria. And to get there, they had their very own transportation, their own ferry from the foot of 92nd Street across to Queens, and it was known as the Piano Ferry. And so the piano workers would take it every morning.
Mm. Well, one thing, too, that a lot of people don't realize is that when Germans immigrated to the United States, they were the most literate of any immigrants until that time. Most of them knew how to read and write. And so the trades that they found themselves in were usually not the backbreaking labor, but they were skilled labor that mm-hmm. required a certain amount of education. So it's not a surprise that there were a good number of immigrants who worked making pianos. Mm-hmm. You know, there was a little bit of dark history in Yorkville, but also one where the neighborhood residents stood up for their better angels. In the 30s, Yorkville was the home base of the German-American Bund, which was the most notorious pro-Nazi group in the 30s in the U.S. Mm-hmm. But when they marched, it led to spontaneous protests by other residents. And because there were many German speakers, Yorkville also became a haven for refugees from Germany in the 30s, fleeing fascist Germany, and also refugees from the communist regimes in the 50s and the 60s. Very, very important part of the neighborhood's history. And the neighborhood is also the site of the annual Steuben Parade. Did Jacob Rupert do anything else that he's known for aside from becoming a part owner of the Yankees and signing Babe Ruth away from Boston? I have to always rub that in the face of people I know from Boston that we got Babe Ruth away from the Red Sox.
Well, I mean, I think that's what he's most beloved for in the city, but he was also a senator, so he had a really sort of deep connection not only to baseball, but also to politics and also to brewing. And so he just kind of was an all around an American, if you like.
Was he born in Germany?
His father had immigrated to New York City in the 1830s. And so I believe that he was second generation.
Oh, okay. There are some notable buildings in Yorkville. People don't realize that. They think mm-hmm. it's sometimes the impression is just like some old tenements and white brick buildings. But there are some notable buildings, both residential and otherwise. Tell us about the Manhattan and why it was one of the first modern apartment buildings in the city.
Sure. So what's so interesting about Yorkville, and as you say, it is not nondescript in terms of architecture at all. I've talked a little bit about the ecclesiastical architecture and how, immigrant communities really sort of made community in the built environment that way. But because there were so many immigrant communities in Yorkville, it really became a sort of petri dish for housing reform, if you like. And so there were all of these model tenements being built in the neighborhood because the idea was, okay, the dumbbell tenements, the old law tenements that were built on the Lower East Side, it was pretty common knowledge, that living in that way was just untenable. And so the answer was, okay, how do we create, more livable quarters for people to reside in. And the Manhattan was an early answer to that.
The Manhattan, the building called Manhattan.
On 86th Street, yep. Because it had things that normal or older tenements would not have. So it focused on cross ventilation. It had, double height windows. It had stairwells that were not crowded. It had kinds of fire escapes that wouldn't break. You know what I mean? It was much more livable than other tenements. But the issue that they ran into was that because it was so well built, it was more expensive than other tenements would be. And so they really ran into this kind of catch-22 where they were creating this wonderful housing, but it was not within the realm of what people who needed to live in it could actually afford. So they were building it as a model tenement for the working class, but the working class was never able to live there.
Well, past mayor of New York grew up there, Robert Wagner.
Yes.
Actually, he didn't have far to go. Then he became mayor. He went to Gracie Mansion.
Then he went to Gracie. Yep, it's all in the
around
neighborhood.
The quarter.
Yep,
right,
staying
right.
in Yorkville, absolutely.
Another very important building and a very beautiful building that also befell kind of the same fate mm-hmm. was the Cherokee Apartments. For those people who don't know them, they're between York Avenue and the East River, 76th and 77th Street, I think. Mm-hmm. Very, actually really, really pretty. What was special about the Cherokee when it was built?
So they were built specifically to combat tuberculosis. So when they were built, they're now known as the Cherokee Apartments, but they were first known as the sanitary apartments. And the point was that light and air, in this case, triple hung windows, like truly, truly spacious living quarters, would sort of alleviate this real threat of disease that people really suffered in traditional tenements because they were living on top of each other in this really, you know, difficult way. And so the answer was, okay, you know, how can we create space for people to live? And that was the point of the Cherokee Apartments. And they were actually funded by the Vanderbilts. And so it was this idea of, you know, like, what does charity look like? But in the same way, the Vanderbilts realized, like, okay, you know, we can't, housing reform can't be pure charity, right? We can't just kind of undersell these apartments so that, yes, people can live in them, but then, you know, they're not turning a profit. And so they didn't do that. They said, okay, you know, we will basically rent them at cost. And it was the same situation as with the Manhattan, that you had these incredible model tenements, but then they didn't serve the people whom they were built for because couldn't afford them. So, you know.
And there are balconies and Juliet balconies on all of them. It's a really, really pretty building. The only complaint that I get from clients is that there are no elevators. They have to walk up the steps. So even though it's really pretty, it doesn't have that mod con. Were there many people who had tuberculosis who first moved in to them when they were built?
Yeah, so they were built for that reason. And those were the first tenants, people who, had been tubercular or were overcoming that disease. Yes. So it started out, you know, as a way to combat that. And then it became clear that, you know, people looking to escape the threat of that just didn't have that opportunity really. But it started out absolutely as that, goal.
Well, Yorkville was also the first place where Andrew Carnegie's foundation built libraries. Do you want to speak briefly about Carnegie's libraries and about the first library that was built in Yorkville?
Absolutely. So, as you say, you mentioned that the Germans were among the best educated, you know, and most literate populations in New York City. And so the Germans traditionally really brought libraries to New York City, the first, I guess, being the Astor Library, John Jacob Astor being a German immigrant himself. And then the first circulating library in New York City is the Ottendorfer Library down in what was Kleine Deutschland, now on 2nd Avenue. And that was financed by Oswald Ottendorfer. And so when Andrew Carnegie, you know, agreed with the New York Public Library in 1911 to found all of these branch libraries, he founded 67, which is just a stunning number. The first one was built in Yorkville, and it had this incredible sort of German and Czech collection as well as English. And the point was that if you're going to serve neighborhoods, if these are going to be like truly neighborhood institutions, they must reflect the communities they serve. And that's something that the New York Public Library has traditionally been really dedicated to and really good at, and really I think is a model, you know, for how our public institutions should function. But truly it was a reflection of, you know, the citizens of Yorkville, that they were readers, they were educated, they really valued that kind of experience. And so it was really made manifest there, absolutely.
Hmm. Well, we have about a minute left in our segment, and I want to move from education and libraries to things a little bit more base, to things involving stomach and taste and culinary. What are some of the older businesses that serve particular ethnic and communities in Yorkville and that still are there to this day?
Well, Ore Washers is one of the oldest bakeries in Yorkville, which is so wonderful. Glazer's just closed, which was so sad. But, you know, there are a number of German sausage emporiums that you can still find in Yorkville. And so, you know, there's really, if you're looking for those kinds of ethnic eats, you can absolutely still find them, which is really nice.
Of course, Heidelberg is still there.
Yes, indeed. Yes. Of course.
Well, that's going to be a segue to our second guest after we take a short break. We're going to be speaking with the third generation owner of one of Yorkville's oldest businesses, Lucy Levine from Archive on Parade. Thank you so much for your time, and thanks for visiting with us again on Rediscovering New York.
Thank you so much for having me.
We'll be back in a moment.
Howdy, I am Joseph Franklin McElroy, host of the new podcast, Gateway to the Smokies. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Tuesday night from 6 p.m. to 7. Every episode is dedicated to memorable experiences in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park and surrounding areas. This show features experts and locals who will expound upon the richness of culture, history, and adventure that awaits you in the Smokies. Tune in every Tuesday from 6 p.m. to 7 on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a cannabis enthusiast, a cannabis professional, or interested in entering the cannabis space? I'm Johnny Tsunami, and this is Planet Baco Lolo, a less taboo view. On our show, we will discuss the cannabis world through the perspective of various cannabis professionals. Tune in every Thursday evening, Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m., Talk Radio NYC, Planet Baco Lolo, a less taboo view.
Are you passionate about the conversation around racism? Hi, I'm Reverend Dr. TLC, host of the Dismantle Racism Show, which airs every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc. Join me and my amazing guests as we discuss ways to uncover, dismantle, and eradicate racism. That's Thursdays at 11 o'clock a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a small business trying to navigate the COVID-19 related employment laws? Hello, I'm Eric Sauver, employment law business law attorney and host of the new radio show, Employment Law Today. On my show, we'll have guests to discuss the common employment law challenges business owners are facing during these trying times. Tune in on Tuesday evenings from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
We're back. Support for Rediscovering New York comes from our sponsors. The Mark Myman Team, mortgage strategist at Freedom Mortgage. For assistance in any kind of residential mortgage, Mark and his team can be reached at 646-330-4735. And the law offices of Thomas Siaka. Tom specializes in trusts, estate planning, and probate administration. Tom and his staff can be reached at 212-495-0317. Rediscovering New York is a show about New York's neighborhoods and the myriad textures of our amazing city. Even though I work in real estate, one thing our show is not about is the business of real estate. But fear not, there is a good one. Good Morning New York, Real Estate with Vince Rocco, my colleague and friend at Halsted. You can listen to Vince's show on Tuesday mornings live at 9 a.m., and it can be heard at voiceamerica.com. You can like this show on Facebook, Rediscovering New York with Jeff Goodman, novel, I know. And also follow me on Instagram, Jeff Goodman NYC. If you have comments or questions or you'd like to get on our show's mailing list, please email me, jeff@rediscoveringnewyork.nyc. One other note before we get to our second guest, when I'm not hosting the show, I am a real estate agent in our amazing city. I help my clients buy, sell, lease, and rent property. If you'd like to see how I can help you with your real estate needs, you can reach me at 646-306-4761 or jeff@rediscoveringnewyork.nyc. Well, we have a real treat for our second guest, Jeremy Schaller. He's a third generation owner and president of the famed Schaller and Weber, or those still with who speak German, Schaller und Weber. It's a staple and hallmark of Yorkville for more than 80 years. A third generation butcher, Jeremy has his hands full these days. After spending the last decade at Schaller and Weber, acquainting himself with every aspect of the family business, he's taken the reins as president and is heralding the company into the 21st century via new initiatives in branding, sales, and concepts like the Stube. In addition, before taking over the family business, Jeremy had years of experience in both the fashion world and event planning. He just opened up the third Stube location in Austin, Texas this past week, which I'm going to ask him about, and plans on opening the fourth. and Schaller and Weber's first new location in 30 years, downtown New York in early October. And it's a pleasure. Jeremy, welcome to Rediscovering New York.
Thank you, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
If you're a third generation Schaller, you're probably a New York native.
Yes, I am. Born in New York City Hospital, right down the street on York Ave.
And you spent part of your life of formative years in Yorkville.
Oh, yeah. I moved to Yorkville for college. I went to Pace University. So when I was 18, I moved into my family's building on 86th and 2nd, got a small apartment up there, and lived there for 22 years.
So as a student, you lived above the store?
I did. Wow. I did. It was actually a treat. I moved in for 2 years when I was 16 and 17. My uncle let me use it as a crash pad. So I had a little experience with that then.
Every teenager's dream to have a crash pad in Manhattan.
Yes, I was quite popular at the time.
Your grandfather started Schaller and Weber in 1937 with Tony Weber. Mm-hmm. What was his background before going into this business?
So his background, actually, he grew up in Germany, in Stuttgart. And after World War One, he actually moved to Alsace-Lorraine because work was very scarce in Germany. And he learned how to be a butcher in a town called Metz. A butcher took him under his wing, and then he moved back to Stuttgart after he had apprenticed and he learned the business. And then he moved up to Hamburg, where he got on a boat and then traveled the world. And then he landed in Germany, in America. And as most German immigrants were, they all were coming to Yorkville at that time. So at that point, he got a job with another butcher, and then he met up with another butcher who gave him a job on 89th and 1st, and that butcher went out of business, and then Tony Weber, another partner, said he had a great location on 86th and 2nd. They shared the name, they shared his experience, and that's how Schaller and Weber was born. Mm-hmm.
How did he meet Tony? Did they work in the same place?
Tony was an American, so he had the knowledge and he could communicate with the American customers. So he ran the front of the house, and my grandfather had all the butchering skills and ran the back of the house. He had all the know-how of the meticulous butchering of German products. He had a full line. He made over 200 different meat, beef, and pork products.
So, wow.
Yep.
Well, we should mention that in the tradition of Schaller and Weber, that Schaller and Weber became the first and only American sausage and meat producer to win multiple medals of honor at exhibitions in Holland and Germany.
Yes.
And you and your family continue the tradition because in 2000, Schaller and Weber products entered 20 products in the Welser Volkfest of Austria and came home with 14 medals, gold and silver medals, another first for an American charcutier.
Which is pretty amazing. I mean, we were up against all of the European brands at the time. It became impossible for us to continue to compete in that competition after 2000 because the USDA made it very stringent to export meat products outside of, well, from America to Europe due to mad cow disease. So restrictions cracked down on that, and we could no longer enter the competition. But when we were there, we really dominated the competition based on our quality.
Hmm. Did your father assume the management of the business from your grandfather?
He did. My father went to school in Connecticut. He really had a good business background, and he was an innovator to the family business by introducing a lot of machinery. He and my grandfather bought a factory in Astoria, Queens in 1960. And basically from there, they started getting into packaged meat distribution. Now we sell our meat products to everywhere in the country except for Hawaii and Alaska.
Wow.
But my father was an innovator when we could take on more shelf life with meat products, innovation on mass production for the brand. So he brought a lot of different knowledge that my grandfather had to the table.
You have a background in fashion and event planning. What was it that had you decide that you would take up the reins and get involved in the family business?
Basically, out of college, my family's... I worked with the family business as a kid. We all had to put in time linking sausages, working in the packing room, doing every step of the family business. But when I graduated college, my uncle, who was running the company at the time, said to do something different for a couple of years. So I started working in the fashion industry. I did that for about 6 years and then came back to the family business when a position opened up. And it was a good time and a good, I had some good experience at that point.
When did you take over the management of the family business?
I took it over 4 years ago when my uncle passed away, the same uncle. So he passed away. At that time, he was mentoring me to take over the family business, and I was in a position to do that. And then really, I started introducing some of the innovation that he got very sick, and he was unable to continue to operate in the business. So that was my opportunity.
Hmm. Yeah. How many locations of Schaller and Weber are there?
So at the moment, we have one for Schaller and Weber, but we're opening up our second one in October at Essex Crossing, which is a new development downtown.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
What's the Stub?
So the Stub was a new business.
Stub, sorry.
The Stuba, actually.
The Stuba, okay.
Yeah, it's sort of like the Schaller and Weber thing. Uh-huh. It's Stuba. Stuba means small room in German. So it was a creation that I made. My partner in that, my best friend growing up, Jesse Dennis, and I created a little offshoot. There was a room at Schaller and Weber that was basically, we were using it for garbage. There was no purpose for this room. Dead space in New York, which is, you know, it's time to make it valuable.
Yes, foolish commodity underutilized space, especially on 86th Street and 2nd Avenue.
Right, right. So we decided, with the 2nd Avenue subway coming, to do a little hot dog stand concept to the street. So not only did we just, I'd been to Berlin a lot of times and started getting this concept of currywurst, which is a popular German street food. We do the classic bratwurst with sauerkraut and mustard, but we wanted to expand on that. So we started doing interesting innovations. We do like the Steuben Reuben. We do a banh mi inspired sausage. We've incorporated about 10 seasonal sausages that we rotate out, always using our Schaller and Weber meats, but then doing fun skill toppings on top of them to keep it interesting.
Well, one thing I wanted to ask when I read the background of the businesses is had you open up a location in Austin? I can guess. I've been to Austin a couple of times. I love it. It's mm-hmm. a great place. But why Austin and not anywhere else in the country?
So one of my really good friends based in Austin came to New York, and he was blown away by the concept of the Stuba. So he saw the concept. He was in finance. He was in his 50s, and he said, I'm done with this. I need to do something more exciting. I want to bring this concept to Austin. He got an investor, and now, well, just this past weekend, we opened up our second location in Austin.
Wow.
Yeah, at 600 6th Street.
Well, people from Austin know a good thing when they see it.
They do, and they love meat. They truly do love meat down there.
Well, the Texans, you know.
Yes.
The best, I don't eat mammal meat myself anymore, but the best barbecue place I ever was at was outside Austin, the Salt Lake.
Oh, amazing barbecue down there.
Unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Let's move to Yorkville. What is it that you like about the vibe of Yorkville? Describe the vibe of Yorkville to you.
Yeah. I mean, I lived there all of my 20s, all of my 30s, and it's changed so much. We dealt with a lot of hardship when they had the creation of, they were building out the 2nd Avenue subway and put a fence in front of 2nd Avenue in front of our store for about 9 years. And
wow, that's a big, big challenge.
Mm-hmm. And just growing up there, it really put a damper to 2nd Avenue. You know, a lot of businesses went out of business. It was sort of a dreary time on 2nd Avenue. But it's all changed. The 2nd Avenue subway, since it opened in 2017, has just been tremendous and has changed the entire vibe of the community.
Hmm. Before the subway sort of dealt a death knell to some businesses and also impacted the neighborhood for the worse, what was the vibe like before that happened? What was special to you about Yorkville?
So it was so different. It was a lot of sports bars. It was... 86th Street had a more commercial feel to it, but in a different way. It was more, I was just in Brooklyn, in downtown Brooklyn, and I've seen that neighborhood change today. It was just tremendous. And you see better shops coming in there. It was like The Wiz, it was Circuit Cities, it was a lot of brands that are now non-existent at the time. Well, that are now non-existent. But I love that we have Shake Shack there now. We have a meatball shop. We've got so many new brands that it's creating a whole new atmosphere there.
So with the introduction of the construction of the Second Avenue subway, till that really changed the neighborhood dramatically, both during and after.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's definitely raised the quality of the neighborhood. For you, from a real estate standpoint, I mean, and for myself, just what I see the neighborhood, the value of the neighborhood, it still has a lot of the ethnic values that it used to have, but it also has this new vibe to it. There's this great new bar called Ethel's. That's a fascinating place.
Is that on 85th Street? Or
On 85th and 2nd. Uh-huh. It's a rock and roll bar. It just has a great vibe to it. It's exciting. Yeah, you never think places like that would have opened around that neighborhood.
Oh, no. When I hosted one of my walking tours in Yorkville a couple of years ago, and I had to go out and scout out a place to, and I was surprised at the number of places that were really great. And I actually picked one across from Ethel's. It was on the northwest corner of 85th Street. I forgot the name of the business, but we had our event there. You know, the Yorkville that I'm 58, going on 59. The memory I have of Yorkville when I started to come of age and going to some concerts and just hanging out is there were still like older German people. And I remember going to one church concert and there were a couple of women with, you know, buns and, you know, the blonde hair had faded a long time ago.
Yep.
And there were some other businesses that aren't there anymore, like the Ideal Diner.
Yep.
Like I remember there was one waitress there who also fit that bill pretty well. I forgot her name, but she was an old battle axe.
Oh, yeah. Quite a few of those.
Yeah.
There's still one or two.
And, of course, you know, whenever businesses close, even though new businesses open up in their places, and that's just part of the texture of life in the city, we always feel a sense of loss for the ones that closed that we may have liked and that were part of our lives in some way. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to continue our conversation with Jeremy Schaller, third-generation business owner and president of Schaller & Weber. Stay tuned.
Hey everybody, it's Tommy D, the nonprofit sector connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host a program, Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on talkradio.nyc.
Uninformed about menopause and how it impacts on your life? Hi, I'm Pat Duckworth, women's health strategist and host of the Hot Women Rock radio show, empowering women leaders at menopause. Join me every Thursday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. UK time on talkradio.nyc for interviews with inspirational women who will share their top tips to rock your world.
Have you ever thought of reinventing yourself? Are you looking to create a new life's journey? Hi, I'm Kevin Barbaro, host of Coffee Talk XL every Tuesday night, 5, 8 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc. Tune in live to hear me and my guests from a variety of different backgrounds. As a former college coach and a current full-time actor and owner of multiple companies, my show is as eclectic as my life. That's Coffee Talk XL every Tuesday night, 8 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
We're back with Jeremy Schaller, who's actually the third generation owner of Schaller & Weber, or Schaller & Weber, for people who know it well. You know, a couple of the businesses that are still there, one of them is Heidelberg, which I still really like. They have a really good Jägerschnitzel, which I enjoy. It's chicken. Do you know if most of your customers to the store are still live in Yorkville, or do most of them come from outside the neighborhood now?
So that was a very, very difficult challenge that I had when I took over the business. 4 years ago when I did take the business over from my uncle, he kept everything running status quo for about 25 years from the last renovation of the store. People loved the store. It was, if people that know it recall, it was very cluttered. It had
kind of old world in that sense.
Very, very old world, but to the point where some German customers of mine that were like Kurt Grutenbrunner, who's a very popular Austrian restaurateur in Manhattan, he and a mentor to me, he told me, you've got to do something with this place. It's dusty. And it kind of was. It had a, I don't want to say anything from the nostalgia of what it was, but it could use a facelift, a brush up. And I knew that we also needed to attract a customer base that was not only our old German customer base, but that was the residents of Yorkville. So one big challenge of what I did was I turned it from more of this Eastern or German European specialty store into a mixture of that and a very approachable store for a younger Yorkville customer. Somebody that just moved into the neighborhood that wanted to walk into the store could find all these European delicacies, but also just things that they needed in like an environment that they would just like to shop and that wasn't something that they would be intimidated by.
It wasn't stodgy. It spoke to them.
Exactly. Yeah. And it still kept the interest of the old Germans. So with that, which was a huge challenge because the old Germans just hated it because that's kind of how they are. Any kind of change, they are immediately opposed to it. But eventually, I won back their trust, and
especially if you had the product that they like to eat. That
was the thing. We kept all of the great German products. We never took anything away, but they just felt like I did when I brought in some new local products and things like that. But so now they're all happy, and we've really brought in a new clientele that is the local people that live in Yorkville now.
Well, you have to do that to have a successful business. I mean, I'm in a customer service business, and I've been in marketing and advertising for most of my career. You have to really your potential customer base is always evolving,
right?
And you have to speak to them. And of course, Yorkville has had a big change. In fact, a lot of younger people have moved to Yorkville when rents were cheap, especially when the subway was being built. The Second Avenue subway was being built. That's who moved into the neighborhood. It was known as value. Mm-hmm. Well, how do you get the interest of those people?
And, exactly.
You want to talk about your web address for a second? It's
sure. It's www.schallerweber.com, SchallerWeber.com. We do all of, we can mail order all over the country, and we send our products to any state in the nation. And we've done very well with our online business. We sell a lot of German specialties you can't find anywhere else, as well as all the Schallenweber products.
Mm. Well, Jeremy, you talk about the having evolved the image of the business. When I went online to look at the website, I was expecting the old Schaller and Weber that I had always heard about and known, but indeed, mm-hmm. I was. It's new. It's very creative. It's very,
Thank you.
It just draws you in. It's not, it's not the I don't want to say stodgy to say your family business was stodgy, but not
right.
The old, old grocery.
Yes.
In fact, the Schaller and Weber that I sort of remember, I've been in a couple of times, but even I know someone. He lives right here on the Upper West Side, Bob Schiffman. And Bob told me on one of my tours a while ago that he has fond memories of, in the 40s, his mother taking him to Schaller and Weber and buying stuff. And one of his favorites was the Leberkäse, mm-hmm. which is the liver cheese. And he would talk about how the person behind the counter would give him a little slice.
Sure. We still do. We still do to the kids. It's something that's nostalgic that we hold on to.
Would you have any special advice for anyone who's looking to open up a business in Yorkville now? As long as they weren't a competitor to yours directly, obviously.
Yeah. I mean, of course, as business goes, location is key. There's so much, I would say being close to one of the new subway stops is a very, very important decision to be made.
I mean, the entrance is right there, right?
It's right there for us, but if you're opening up a new business, finding a good location near one of the subway stops would be a good business decision, in my opinion, especially if you need some great foot traffic. But, yeah.
You're opening up other businesses. You're going to open up one downtown, and you have two in Austin now. Do you ever see yourself opening up another business in Yorkville?
That's an interesting question. We're trying to expand today. I actually looked at a location in DeKalb Market. So we're thinking about Brooklyn as the next step for the Stuba. concept, opening up another location in Yorkville. We're opening up a private event space within our current location that we're going to do private dinners in.
Do you have room for it?
We do. We do. Okay. We just fixed up our backyard and added another kind of event party room in our basement. So people can rent it out, and it's another little side project we're doing. Mm. Yeah.
You talked about the struggles that you and other business owners had when the subway, when the Second Avenue subway was being built, and that, you know, mess of an environment. Of course,
it sure
turned out well. And also the sort of the rebirth of the street and the neighborhood since the construction was done. Post-construction, is there anything that you struggle with in Yorkville now? Anything not having to do with subway construction? Something that challenges you as a business owner to try to do your work in the neighborhood?
Well, there's always something that pops up as a business owner. Lucky for us, the last 2 years have been a godsend, and that is all due to the Second Avenue subway. Our business is up 20% since the opening of that, and I'm sure there'll be other, you know, issues. There always are as a New York business owner. We're doing a renovation of our building next year, so of the apartments in our building, so that's going to be a big challenge. And I'm sure it'll bring on its own set of events as well.
Is there anything about Yorkville that surprises you anymore?
It's surprising how well the city did with the way that they built out the Second Avenue subway. I was just overwhelmingly impressed. All the Chuck Close art down there is beautiful. The new escalators are beautiful. The elevators are beautiful. It's just overwhelming. It's fantastic.
And the art in the subway system, I mean, they're not Van Goghs and Degas, but it's really, really beautiful. For subway public art, it's really, really beautiful.
It's impressive, yes.
Is there anything you wish was in Yorkville, but that is not right now? Particular kind of business or just something, service or something else that you would like to see in the neighborhood?
That's a good question. We're always looking for new things to come to the neighborhood. Right now, if you're somebody that's visiting or experiencing Yorkville for the first time, just explore it. Check out Carl Schurz Park. Walk around to see some of the old buildings. It's an impressive neighborhood. East End is beautiful. York Ave's a beautiful street. We're always open to new businesses coming around, and business feeds off one another, and it's just a neighborhood thing. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
Jeremy, thank you so much for your time and coming on Rediscovering New York.
Thanks, Chef.
We've been chatting with Jeremy Schaller, third-generation owner and president of Schaller & Weber on 86th Street and 2nd Avenue. And I don't mean any more, but I hear the meats are fabulous. If you have comments or questions about the show, or if you'd like to get on the show's mailing list, please email me, jeff@rediscoveringnewyork.nyc. You can like us on Facebook, Rediscovering New York with Jeff Goodman, and also follow me on Instagram @jeffgoodmannyc. Once again, I'd like to thank our sponsors, the Mark Myman Team, Mortgage Strategist at Freedom Mortgage, and the law offices of Thomas Siaka, specializing in trusts, estate planning, and probate administration. And don't forget, when I'm not hosting this show, I'm a real estate agent at Halsted, and whether you're selling, buying, leasing, or renting, my team and I provide our clients with the best service and expertise in New York City real estate. You can reach us at 646-306-4761. Our producer is Ralph Storier, who could not be in the studio tonight due to recuperating from a broken arm. We wish him well. Our engineer is Sam Leibowitz. Our special consultant is David Griffin of Landmark Branding. Stay tuned for At Home with David Thiergartner, coming up next at 8 p.m. right here on talkradio.nyc. And at 9 p.m., Beyond Potential, Living Life Your Way with my friend Noreen Sumter. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Do you run or are ready to open your own business? Hi, I'm Jeremiah Fox. I've been operating and opening small business for the last 25 years, and I'm the host of the new show, The Entrepreneurial Web. Tune in every Friday at noon Eastern Time for insights and stories on the nuances of running small business right here on Fridays at noon, talkradio.nyc.
Do you love or are you intrigued about New York City and its neighborhoods?
I'm Jeff Goodman, host of Rediscovering New York, a weekly show that showcases New York's history and its extraordinary neighborhoods. Every Tuesday live at 7 p.m., we focus on a particular neighborhood and explore its history, its vibe, its feel, and its energy. Tune in live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Did you know that nearly one in five adults in the U.S. battles mental illness? Hi, my name is Albert Dabba. I'm the host of the show Extra Innings. Extra Innings, I discuss the topics of wellness, mental health, and the experience of surviving multiple suicides within my family. Listen live every Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern to Extra Innings for discussions with sports figures, artists, mental health professionals, and many others. That's Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
In a post-COVID world, you may have many unanswered questions regarding your health. Are you looking to live a healthier lifestyle? Do you have a desire to learn more about mental health and enhance your quality of life? Or do you just want to participate in self-understanding and awareness? I'm Frank R. Harrison, host of Frank About Health, and each Thursday, I will tackle these questions and work to enlighten you. Tune in every Thursday at 5 p.m. on talkradio.nyc, and I will be Frank About Health to advocate for all of us.
McElroy, host of the new podcast, Gateway to the Smokies. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Tuesday night from 6 p.m. to 7. Every episode is dedicated to memorable experiences in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park and surrounding areas. This show features experts and locals who will expound upon the richness of culture, history, and adventure that awaits you in the Smokies. Tune in every Tuesday from 6 p.m. to 7 on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.